The Fan on Demand. More analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, it is time for Baseball Central, brought to you by Home Hardware. I am Jeff Blair, joined by Joe Siddle of our Blue Jays play-by-play crew and Sportsnet TV as well. You're a man of... Can you write a bit?
No.
Oh, okay.
I could try.
Well, try to save something for the rest of us, will you? It is the Jose Bautista edition of Baseball Central. It's going to seem like it anyhow. Of course, you know that the Jays lost 2-1 to the Tampa Bay Rays yesterday at the Rogers Center. A game that, well, Joe, we've talked about this. It is remarkable how when something happens, in this case, Jose Bautista getting tossed out of the game, Nolan Reimold coming in to replace him in right field. It is amazing how, A, the ball finds you, and B, it's amazing how Nolan Reimold was the last guy at the plate at the end of the game and, of course, overpowered at on a swinging third strike, and the Rays win 2-1. I want to talk about the Bautista incident for a variety of reasons. First of all, it is Jose Bautista's first ejection this year. I will say that. We'll throw that out there because I know a lot of people are hammering on Jose. Secondly, Joe, I don't know what was said, but on the list of Jose Bautista's top 10 blow-ups, that wouldn't rate in the top 20. It was certainly a lot less than what Edwin Encarnacion did an inning later, where without getting tossed. Before we get to John Gibbons and Jose Bautista talking about the incident with Bill Welke, the home plate umpire, I wanted your take as a former player.
Well, as a former player, if I'm Jose Bautista's teammate, I'm upset with him right now because he has to stay in the ballgame. He's the top performer. He's been struggling, and I think what we saw very clearly were the frustrations of Jose Bautista right there. He got called, pitch that he thought was out of the zone, but it's one thing to have your word and go back, and that's what he has to do right there. He can question it very quickly, but you can see Welke gave him an opportunity, said, enough, get to the dugout. He didn't do it, and if you're going to pry him anymore, you're going to get the heave-ho, and that's exactly what he did. Jose just can't do that in that situation. It's a 1-0 ball game. There's still a lot of baseball to be played. I made the comment right after the ejection thinking he's going to his place in the order is going to come up again in this ball game. We'll see if it's a key situation. Turns out it came up twice, but what really hurt them was defensively. Jose Bautista, he's a great outfielder as well, so it really hurt the team.
Well, and I can tell you, I asked John Gibbons on the way back to his office after the post-game interview session. I said, how bad was Welke? Because Welke was getting looks from a lot of players, but I said, how bad was that strike zone? Gibbons said it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't.
He said it was consistent. He said you can quibble with anybody's strike zone, but he said that certainly wasn't bad enough that you would question the umpire on it.
No, it's one thing if you get, sometimes we'll see a young umpire, one of the call-ups perhaps behind the plate, have his struggles throughout the day, and you can question a lot of things. But Welke's strike zone was fine. There's going to be tons of borderline pitches in baseball. One side's going to disagree with the call, and that's what's going to happen. Unfortunately for Jose, again, I think this was a buildup of emotions. He's been struggling. This is a team leader, supposedly, that is carrying this club and one of the key cogs in the wheel, and things are not going very well for his team, but also they're not going well for him lately, and that's not a lot of fun. I understand frustration. Listen, nobody knows what it's like to be Jose Bautista in that situation. The frustration was boiling over, but he just has to come above that, put the umpires behind him. He's got to stay in the ballgame.
This is the first time that Jose Bautista has failed to reach base in three consecutive games since April 9th to 12th, 2012. So it's been a while since he's been in this type of I'm not going to call it a slump, this type of funk where he's not getting on base. We are going to go to the tape of John Gibbons, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and Jose Bautista after the game yesterday. First, we'll go to John Gibbons. This is John Gibbons addressing the media following yesterday's 2-1 loss to Tampa Bay. That left the Jays 8 games back in the East and 5.5 back in the wild card.
Bottom line, we need them in the game. You know, say your piece, get the hell out of there. You know, we're trying to get in the playoffs. We need you on the field. You know, and he's a marked man in this game. You know, I mean, so then, you know, I mean, Bill Wilkie, I thought he had a pretty good zone today. I mean, it was steady, you know. I mean, I thought, you know, he was calling strikes. He was looking to call strikes. So, but we need you in the game.
That was John Gibbons addressing the media after the game. Very pointed. That's unusually pointed criticism for a manager. That's a manager calling a player out is what it is.
And this is a manager that backs his players 100% of the time, all the time. Truly respect him for that. Been around the Tigers for a lot of years. Jim Leland's the same way. Always trying to take the hit for players from the media or wherever it wants to come from. Always trying to deflect that stuff and absorb it as a manager. John's been outstanding at that. Yesterday, I think he probably had his frustrations boil over too. If I'm the manager of this club, let's not kid ourselves. Jose Bautista has arguably carried this team throughout the season. He's a leader. He's one of the top players on the team. And for you to lose him in the sixth inning over, I don't want to say a trivial matter, but a called strike on a very close pitch. It's not like the ball was in the dirt or something. It was very close. But to lose him offensively and defensively at that point is just not called for.
This was Jose Bautista's reaction after the game when he was interviewed by members of the media. Again, this is his first ejection of the year.
Do I blame myself? I mean, if you want to stick to facts, the facts are that because I did say something, anything at all, I did get tossed. I guess you would say yes. But again, I feel like what I know I said was nowhere near warranting getting ejected.
That is, and Jose Bautista was later asked in the course of that interview if the 0 for 11 had anything to do with it. And he just kind of smirked and said no. But it's pretty clear that, as I said, people have seen Jose Bautista meltdowns before, that's not in the top 10. But I think, Joe, you had it right. It's very clear, and you know, if you saw the visual, it's very clear that he, and there's so many unwritten rules about with arguing when it comes to arguing with umpires, but it's pretty clear that he went away and came back at the umpire. People are going to roll their eyes and go, you know, what the hell does that have to do with it? Well, you know what? It has a lot to do with it. When you talk about body language and your approach to the umpire, it has a lot to do with it.
Well, and again, what we have to remember here, this is balls and strike that he's arguing. You can't do that. You can't argue balls and strikes. Now, a lot of umpires will give you that leash, and Welke did that. He allowed him. He talked. But then when you saw Welke push that hand saying, okay, basically enough, I don't know what he said, but basically sending him off, Jose kept at it. You just can't do that. Once he does that, you better get out of there, much like Gibby just talked about. Or at that point, the umpire is going to run you, and that's what Welke did. Is it a quick trigger? Maybe a little bit. It doesn't matter. If Jose may have been speaking to Welke with the utmost respect, but it doesn't matter. You're arguing balls and strikes. He's asked you to leave, and you don't leave. It happened.
Joe Siddle and Jeff Blair on Baseball Central, brought to you by Home Hardware. Rob Bradford of WEEI in Boston will join us later on in the show. We'll get you set for the Red Sox-Jays 3-game series. It starts tonight at the Rogers Center. The Red Sox. Wow, they are scuffling. That's the only way to put it. Making things worse for the Blue Jays. Yeah. In addition to losing the series to Tampa Bay, the Chicago Cubs went out and swept the Baltimore Orioles. The team in this division that really made some hay this week was the New York Yankees. They're suddenly six back. Brian McCann's contributing. Martin Prado's contributing. Brandon McCarthy's contributing. I want to ask you, Joe, a lot of Prado and McCarthy, two guys acquired at or near the trade deadline. A lot of this stuff is going to get back. You know this, and the Jays know this. A lot of this stuff with Jose Bautista is going to get back to his statements after the trade deadline. Is there an issue in this team right now with attitude, do you think? Going back, focusing back on the trade deadline, and is that disappointment still lingering?
I think for me, what's the most disappointing, yes, of course, that attitude can linger and be around still. We had Bautista and Jensen both spoke out about no moves being made to try to improve this team at the deadline. My question now to those two players and to the rest of the team is, how about if you're so angry with ownership about not going out to get people and your general manager, how about taking it upon yourselves and saying, okay, blank to you, we're going to go win this thing right here by ourselves. That's the attitude you want to see. I don't think that's what we're seeing because that negativity has permeated this team since that time. Now, is that the reason why they've not played well since? Well, I think there's a lot of reasons. They've faced some good pitching. They haven't had clutch hitting. They haven't pitched well themselves. But mentally, this game is a mental game. And from that point on, did it affect the club? I think it has to. There's a negative vibe, a negative climate in that atmosphere in that clubhouse.
We know that Jose Bautista is under contract with this team for a couple more years. It's a very club-friendly contract. it's an undervalued contract based on the market right now. A lot of fans will have some concern. Unhappiness with the way things were done at the trade deadline, now the manager calling out Jose Bautista. Would you at all be concerned about what this means for Jose Bautista's long-term future in Toronto? Because, see, I'm one of those people who normally would be quick to jump in this, but I see Jose Bautista being part of this team for certainly for the next year and into the final year of that contract.
I would say absolutely for this contract. Are you kidding me? This is one outstanding player in Major League Baseball, and you got it right. You're getting him at a bargain. You've got Jose Bautista at a bargain for the next couple of years with that team option. So, no, you try to work this thing out, but I think yesterday we saw a lot of frustrations boiling over, and I think what you're really starting to see is you're starting to see things implode a little bit. This is a team that knows this last week or 2 weeks has been so big, and it has not gone well. And going into this weekend with Tampa, you had to come out of here with 2 out of 3, if not the sweep, and it did not go that way. So you can certainly see these frustrations boiling over. And, hey, are they out of it? No, because as I said this morning, any team in baseball can rattle off 10 of 12 or 14 of 16, just get hot. But unfortunately, all these little sideshows right now can be very distracting for a team that's trying to do that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us, Joe, have been looking at the American League East, and we've probably been guilty of underselling the Orioles a little bit, but with Manny Machado now likely out for the rest of the year, Matt Wieters has already been out for a while. The Orioles have been a great story this year, and there's a terrific article on FanGraphs about just how good their defense has been. And in particular, that seems to have emerged as something of a backbone for that team. But as I watch what the Yankees are doing, and as I saw a little bit of that, the Orioles-Cubs series, I people are sitting there saying the Jays have to win a certain number of games to make the playoffs. You have to win a certain number of games to win the American League East. I think we may be seeing a bit of an outlier season in the American League East. I think it's really there for the taking still. Even with the Yankees being six back, I think it's there for the taking. Yeah, I really do.
I'm not a big fan of those conversations where you have to win 89 games or you're projected to do this. What's it going to take to win this division? Nobody can say that. The Orioles could lose 10 of 12 right now, just like we talked about, those bad streaks. Clearly getting swept by the Cubs, that's a concern for them. So anything can happen, and I think you're right. When you talk about the Yankees right now, that's the team for me that's just quietly laying in the weeds and creeping back up, and they're right into this thing again. And who knows, if they continue to get hot and the Orioles struggle a little bit, they might not just be shooting for that second wild card. They might be shooting for the division here soon. You know, despite what we say, there's still over a month of baseball to be played.
A couple of other issues emerging from this weekend. For me, the one that gets shoved under the rug a little bit, I suppose, is Casey Jansen's status. Not a very good weekend for Casey Jansen. His second half has been awful. I've got to ask you, Joe, never mind. I wrote today in Sportsnet.ca, let's not worry about who's going to close for this team next year. But I'm thinking that John Gibbons has got some decision to make this week when it comes to his closer. I'm not entirely convinced Casey Jansen's still the closer in this team.
Well, I think this happens on a lot of teams when closers go through funks, and sometimes what you'll see is the closer will maybe pitch the eighth inning and back him up an inning or the seventh inning just to get him back on track. We've seen it throughout baseball. Is Casey Jansen there yet? Well, we know what Casey Jansen, how he pitches. He's a guy that has tremendous command, and he's been a tremendous closer in the big leagues. But we just haven't seen it lately. And is it still dating back to that illness he got over the All-Star break and he just hasn't found it? It looks like it to me. It just hasn't been as sharp. He's had a couple outings where he's been better than others. But in general, Casey has not been the same Casey Jansen. What do you do? Keep working it out and try to figure out. What do you do tonight if there's a save situation? Do you go to Casey? Good decision. But I tell you what, the way Aaron Sanchez is pitching right now, wouldn't it be interesting to see him in that role? But I honestly don't see it changing. I think Casey's still your closer right now. And just continue to go day by day that way.
Well, and I think maybe what you can do if you're John Gibbons is, without coming out and saying it, you can form sort of a closer by committee. Maybe you get Brett Cecil some opportunities, Aaron Loop some opportunities. Aaron Sanchez is interesting. I asked John yesterday, I said, come on, it's got to be tempting. You know, you watch that guy throw a 98-mile-an-hour fastball past Ben Zobrist. He totally overmatched Zobrist on Saturday.
He's been outstanding.
You see that in the back of your mind. You just got to be aching to try to run that guy out there.
I think part of it is his youth, though, and he's just up to the big leagues for the first time. Let's not forget now, just because somebody's been great in the sixth inning or seventh or eighth, remember those three outs in the ninth inning, and we've seen it throughout baseball, those are just different outs. They're different outs to get. They're more difficult. So I still think what the way Casey's made up, and as soon as he gets that little command back, and I guess patience can be wearing thin, but I still think he's your guy. He's been tremendous for so long, and my gut would tell me Casey's going to be just fine.
You and Buck both talked a lot this weekend about Casey and about his recovery from that stomach illness or the food poisoning during the All-Star break. And he really does look like a different guy than he did going. I don't know if he's got his weight back.
I think one thing is talked about his illness and just number one, getting your strength back. And that's why, and that doesn't take a couple of days. That can take a week, 2 weeks, who knows, depending on how that illness was and how it affected him. But not only feeling better and getting your strength back, but then now pitching and pitching with conviction and being able to pitch the way he is used to pitching. So who knows how long that can take. But to me, clearly, he's just not the same pitcher right now. So I would have to think that there's still effects from that, even though we're a few weeks removed. But I don't know if that's the answer. I'm not sure even if Casey would say that's the answer. But he clearly just hasn't been the same. But again, not a big concern for me. I look back, the guy's got a track record. There's a reason why he does what he does. He's in a little funk. These guys are human. Hitters do it. Pitchers do it. I think he'll be just fine.
The Red Sox and Jays will start their series tonight at the Rogers Center. Toronto has pretty much owned Boston this year. It has been a rarity in that regard. The Red Sox have lost 8 in a row, and they are 18 games out in the American League East. They are 1-9 in their last 10, and they are 27-34 on the road. It's been a really, obviously a really difficult year for the Red Sox, so much so that at the trade deadline, they embarked on a pretty remarkable, pretty pronounced rebuild. Rob Bradford of WEEI in Boston is one of our favorites, and he joins us on Baseball Central to discuss the Red Sox. Rob, thanks a lot for doing this.
Oh, yeah, listen, Jeff. I mean, yes, they've been bad against Toronto, but in fairness, they've been bad against everybody.
Well, your colleague Alex Speer has an item on the website, which I found fascinating because, you know, look, whatever people may say about the Red Sox, whatever people in other cities may think about the Red Sox, I think there's pretty much uniform admiration for guys like Dustin Pedroia for the way they play, the way they leave it all out in the field. And I was thinking about this as I was watching some of the game on Saturday, and I was thinking to myself, guys like Pedroia, it's not just the losses that must be wearing on them, it's the way they're losing, too. I don't think the Red Sox in their deepest, darkest moments thought it was going to get like this, did they?
No, I don't think anyone could. It's remarkable how where they have landed. And even after the trade deadline that, you know, you kind of brace yourself for what's coming because they've turned over the roster. But you don't still expect it to kind of keep going down this road because there was some enthusiasm, some young guys coming up. But the fact is, Jeff, is that the young guys haven't really been playing all that well. And that's frustrating. And for a guy like Pedroia or David Ross or Mike Napoli, some of the guys that Alex talked to, losing Lester was a big thing. That was a big thing. It took and David Ortiz, I should lump him in too. This guy was a guy who had been there with them for a long time. They came to understand the dynamic, and maybe the sting was a little less because you got a major league player back in Cespedes. But you don't know. They don't know Cespedes. They don't know what he's going to be. They haven't played on a championship team with him. So that's the thing that's really, really hard, I think, for these guys to grasp, along with obviously losing all these games.
Rob, talk about the signing of Castillo, this new Cuban defector. Now, is that how much did Cespedes have to do with this signing? He had to be part of that.
Well, you know, I don't think it hurt, but according to Cespedes, he certainly wasn't a friend with him. He was an acquaintance. He had talked to him maybe a couple times. He played against him. But to have a guy come over and have another guy who knows what it's like to go through the process, I think helps. But I think at the end of the day, what helps even more is over $70 million and probably an offer that's blowing away all these other offers. It's kind of a gamble in a way because you're allocating money to a guy who there's no really consensus on. A lot of people think he has an upside, and that's great. But you're also, if you're going to pay that money, you're committing to this guy to be your center fielder, and he hasn't played in a long time. And by all accounts, he's a different player than he was, say, 2 years ago before he came over the States. He blew everyone away in the workout. So it's a bit of a gamble, but I guess the big payoff for them is if he does produce, then you got a potential $15 million a year player for about 10 a year.
Rob Bradford joins us on Baseball Central. You talked about some of the young players that were given chances this year, that young players that didn't come through. How many of those players have effectively played themselves out of the picture for next year? I'm thinking of somebody like Jackie Bradley Jr. Has he played himself out of the picture for next year? Might he be a young guy that the Red Sox may try to trade in the offseason to maybe bolster the rotation or bolster the lineup? Or are they going to be patient with some of these younger players?
Well, I think it's a great question. I mean, with Jackie Bradley, there's no player that any team has been more patient with than him. This is a guy who hit about 210 for the majority of the season while playing every day because he was so dynamic in the outfield. I don't think they've given up on him. I think that all these guys are kind of in play, so to speak. But, guys, the biggest problem is that some of these guys, they say, well, they stockpiled a bunch of these young players, young pitchers, young position players, and now they can make a run at a legitimate major league player, a couple of them. Well, the problem is that these guys aren't producing. So, and I know Stanton's name is always brought up, so let's use him as an example. What if the Marlins said, if the Red Sox said, okay, you know what, you can have any one of these guys. Well, how did the Marlins sell to their fan base, even as Xander Bogaerts, the number two prospect on Baseball America this year, that he's worth it, that he's absolutely going to be a star in the major leagues because what he's done this year hasn't been that sort of player. I think he can be, but so far it just hasn't.
And on that topic, Rob, I was my next question. Xander Bogaerts, I understand he's on the concussion DL now, but what is it in a nutshell? Where has he fallen back this year?
Wow. You know, I think that, first of all, I think they put cart before the horse a little bit because everyone, I thought, believed that this guy was going to be a middle-of-the-order hitter by June or July, and that was unrealistic. He's 21 years old, and he had a ways to go, and a lot of it was based off what he did in the playoffs and World Series last year. So he gets into the major leagues. He switches positions. I think that messed with him a little bit. Then people just start throwing him in sliders, and he can hit a fastball. But watch him when he gets up there, when he comes back from this concussion list, he has a real hard time with sliders. And we know, a 21-year-old rookie, this is probably what you have to go through. But the Red Sox couldn't afford that. They need this guy to be a legitimate hitter. And so I think that's the biggest thing. And then defensively, he's back at shortstop. He's feeling a little bit better about himself. But I think that when he does come back for the next final month, that is one of the things that they're going to have to figure out. Can this guy be your shortstop to begin the year? I think he can, but there are so many kind of bumps in the road here, certainly more than anyone thought there would be for Bogaerts.
Rob Bradford of WEEI joins us in Baseball Central. How has John Farrell adapted to this type of a season? It's got to remind him in some ways of his last season with the Blue Jays.
Yeah, especially probably these last couple months. And you know, I sat down with Farrell about a week ago, and I asked him, I said, what would you have done different? And he admitted, he said, you know, he would have approached the bottom of the lineup differently. In other words, I think there's 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th hitters are the worst in baseball, not even close. And so what he was hoping was, okay, I'm going to ride these guys out. They'll eventually hit. They never did hit, so they didn't bunt. They didn't hit and run. They didn't do some of the things that you need to do when guys aren't hitting. And I still don't think how that would have had a huge effect, but at least he admitted to me that that's the one thing that he wouldn't have done. He wouldn't have been so patient thinking that these guys were going to come around. But other than that, it's, you know, listen, they don't hit, and lately they haven't pitched. I think this is a little bit different than at the beginning of the year. This is just a lack of talent right now with this group.
How much do they have to do with the starting pitching in time for next year? You know, obviously, there's going to be the John Lester stuff is going to be out there in the offseason. I don't know if you think John Lester's coming back. I'll ask you for your gut on that, first of all. But beyond that, how many additions are we realistically looking at for the Red Sox in the offseason?
That's a great question, and it's probably more than they would feel comfortable with because – right now, as I said, it's almost like a tryout period. You're going to see Clay Buchholz tonight. Well, he has to prove himself. He's going to be in the rotation next year, but what is he? Is he a number 5 or is he closer to a 2 and a 3? And then you have a bunch of these guys. You have Joe Kelly. You have Alan Webster, Ruby De La Rosa, Brandon Workman. A bunch of these young players they were hoping would step up, and no one really has been really, really consistent. So they can't say those are the guys we're going to rely on next year. So to answer your question, I think they're going to need at least two proven starters. Now, the Lester conversation, I think there is hope because I do think that he'll take a year less to stay with Boston, and that's a big chunk of money. Mm. That can be $25 million, but I think another team is probably going to blow them out of the water. Another team is probably going to come in with a seven-year deal, especially if he goes on a postseason run, and the Red Sox just aren't going to go near that level.
How much of this season, too, Rob, can be attributed to guys like a Saltalamacchia gone, the year Napoli had, and I think of more of the special things that happened last year. Johnny Gomes hit 13 home runs, and of course, Ellsbury in center field, as opposed to, say, the bottom of the order's done nothing.
Yeah, well, I think that that is a great question and probably the most important one, because if people say what went wrong with, or ask what went wrong with this team, there's a laundry list of things. But I think that you have to start with, you lost some key guys, and you didn't replace him. You lost Saltalamacchia, tried A.J. Pruszynski, was a disaster. You lost Ellsbury, Jackie Bradley, Grady Sizemore, disasters. Then you have Daniel Nava, a guy they were relying on, was sent down to Pawtucket 2.5 weeks into the season. And then Stephen Drew, you didn't sign him. It was a mess once you got him back. So there were some key elements which they just didn't replace. And then you come back to it, just like a couple of years ago when they were bad, the foundation guys weren't as good as they were the previous year. If you go, even before they made this trade, if you said in June, look at the starting nine, every single one of those players were having worse years than they did the year before, and you just can't do that.
Rob, it was good of you to join us, as always.
Always a pleasure, and anytime, and boy, it is a nice day here in Toronto.
It's gorgeous. It'll be a nice night for baseball. Take care, Rob.
Thanks, okay, Rob.
Thanks.
That is Rob Bradford of WEEI in Boston. He is WEEI Red Sox beat reporter. Again, the Red Sox and Jays start a three-game series tonight at the Rogers Center. And the Red Sox, losers of eight straight. I don't know. I guess you could say they're looking to play spoiler. Although it seems the Jays have done a pretty good job of being spoilers themselves. The Jays 5.5 out in the wild card. And the New York Yankees, as Joe Siddle spoke before we talked to Rob Bradford, so very quietly starting to make their move in the American League East. And if Tanaka is at all capable of throwing, it's going to be an interesting final month.
It's hard to believe talk about the New York Yankees doing something quietly, because they're usually always in the headlines, but it's been one of those kinds of years in the American League East. You just really haven't heard the whole Yankees Nation thing because they've been slipping away, but now they're clawing back here, and all of a sudden they're going to give Baltimore a little run.
We're going to take a look around Major League Baseball, the weekend that was, but before we take our break, Joe, a couple of people have reached out to me, and I know this was the topic of conversation a little bit after the game yesterday. I want to talk about the way that 10th inning unfolded for the Blue Jays and the approach we saw at the plate from Jose Reyes and Melky Cabrera. And you know, obviously, anytime in that situation anybody swings at a first pitch, people are going to come down on him. My thinking in that is, if I'm Jose Reyes, I'm going to the plate, and I'm thinking, I'm looking for a pitch. Now, if I see the pitch that I was looking for and I swing at it and miss it, well, you know, okay, that's on me. Or swing at it and don't get good wood on it, that's on me. I can't imagine Jose Reyes was looking for the pitch that he swung at, though.
No, but we've talked a lot on the broadcast, too. Jose Reyes likes to swing the bat early in the count.
Yep.
If he gets a pitch to hit early, if it's first pitch, he's hacking. And he's done a lot of very good things with that approach. It just didn't work yesterday. And that's what happens in baseball. It's not going to work every time. If you give me that situation with Reyes and Melky Cabrera coming up, I'm feeling pretty good about myself if I'm the Toronto Blue Jays. Unfortunately, neither one of them came through in a very key situation. I keep saying, that's baseball. It does happen. These guys have been outstanding a lot of times. And I've talked during the broadcast this weekend, is a lot of times hitters will look for a pitch, and it might not be the pitch they were looking for, and they swing. And the best thing you can do is swing and miss or foul it off. Unfortunately for Reyes, the ball stayed in play. Longoria made the nice play. Melky put his ball in play as well. Longoria did it the other night on Stroman. First pitch, he's looking for a fastball, got it, and he hit it into the left field seats. That's when everything works perfectly. I think both of them were looking for a pitch early in the count, thought it was it, wasn't it. They were fooled. They're both off-speed pitches. It just couldn't have happened any worse.
I guess for a lot of people, Joe, the question is, if a player has done that in the past, I would have a bigger concern. And I know people, when I was talking a little bit about this yesterday, people thought, well, you're just making excuses for Reyes. But my argument was, if it's something the guy hasn't done before, then I think it's fair game to point that out and maybe criticize him. But as you pointed out, you know, as bad as I may not have thought the pitch was a great pitch to swing at, that is Jose Reyes. And it's kind of hard to hammer on a guy for doing something that he's done in the past and had success with it. It'd be different if this was a guy who was used to seeing 15 pitches every at bat and then went up there and, you know, flared the foul. Then you'd go, okay, he didn't do what he normally does. But this is Jose Reyes. That's kind of the way he operates, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And this is it's such a results-oriented business that if the job does not get done, it's easy to criticize. But I'm sorry, Jose Reyes and Melky Cabrera, they just didn't come through in a key situation. I will take them again tonight in that exact situation. These are both tremendous hitters that have contributed greatly. They just didn't get it done. And that happens in this game sometimes. I'll tell you what I have a bigger problem with yesterday is the leadoff walk by Sergio Santos that ended up scoring the game-winning run. You cannot come into a 10th inning ball game and walk the leadoff man. And it's just, we've seen it too much. It way too much.
And what was that 3-2 pitch that he walked him on?
Slider. Curve.
Or slider. It was a slider. I knew it wasn't a fastball.
Bottom line is he walked a leadoff batter in.
Yeah.
I'm sure nobody feels worse than Sergio, but this has been a problem for the Blue Jays all season long.
Yeah. This is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle, brought to you by Home Hardware. We will return and we'll take a look around the majors. It was a busy weekend. Lots of news. And we'll have you covered. Baseball Central returns in the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Prices like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Home Hardware, their presentation of Baseball Central. And the Jays and Red Sox will start their three-game series tonight at the Rogers Center. It'll be Jay Happ on the mound for the Jays. Clay Buchholz for the Red Sox. Joe Siddle, Jerry Howarth, and Mike Wilner will have the call of the game. Joe will be back in the radio booth after a stint on TV. We have to deal with the protest, Joe, from Saturday, from the Saturday Rays and Jays game. Now, it was on a pickoff play at first base. Joe Maddon played the game under protest because he thought that, and it was John Gibbons who requested the replay, but Joe Maddon played the game under protest because he thought John Gibbons was too late coming out of the dugout. Now, we all saw the game, and it's obvious that Mark Burley's on the mound. It's obvious that Yunel Escobar is in the box. Deonner Navarro, to me, looked like he was ready to go. He was looking in the dugout. John Gibbons comes out, and now the rules are pretty clear. The rules as to when the game is commenced are clear. Pitcher on the mound, batter in the box. That's very clear.
Pitcher
on the rubber. And if you know Mark Burley's not wasting any time. Mark Burley's on the rubber all the time. So I think there's a combination of events here. If you read the rules and you go through it, my first reaction was, oh, Maddon's absolutely got a case here. And, of course, the Jays went on to win that game. So if the protest is upheld, the game would be restarted from the point of the protest. I'm thinking he's got a great case here. Then you keep reading. And at the very, very, very bottom, the very last item on replay is that the element of timeliness is determined by the crew chief and that the crew chief is infallible in that regard. In other words, doesn't matter if the pitcher was on the rubber ready to go and the catcher was behind the plate and the batter's in the box. If the crew chief thinks that the manager initiated the review in time, That's all that matters. It's funny because I know that the Joe Maddon talked to reporters yesterday, and he, there was some question whether or not he would withdraw the appeal just because of that. And he said, no, he's going to go ahead and he's going to protest the game and see where it goes. You know, this seems to me to be another example, Joe, of, I think baseball's, the spirit is right with some of the things they're doing, but they really need to, and they'll admit, look, Joe Torre will admit, yeah, we're going to have to tweak a lot of things. As a matter of fact, I wrote in Sportsnet today, people in the commissioner's office have said that there will be some changes to the rules before the playoffs. Like they understand what's going on here. They're analyzing all these things. And I think ultimately, Joe, what's going to come of this, I don't think Joe Maddon wins his protest, but I think in the long run, there may be an adjustment made into what exactly timeliness is.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about Major League Baseball and their whole replay system, it's right now I say good idea, poor execution. Mm-hmm. We just need to tweak the system of the process. Now, going right back to this play, I think what surprises me more than anything is there was no reaction from Adam Lind. As a player, first baseman in this case, putting the tag down on the runner, if you think it was that close, you usually see a reaction from the position player, from the first baseman in this case, to say, hey, and maybe point to your dugout, like, you might want to take a look at this. At least it alerts your bench that was really close, and I think I may have had him. But there's no reaction from Adam, and there's no reaction from Burley on the mound. So I don't think anyone was really inclined to do that. Now, of course, underneath, Sal Buterre would be underneath, and I'm sure he was looking at it, and it took a little time before they finally decided. But as you talked about the rule, so Mark Burley's on the pitching rubber, Escobar gets in the batter's box. By the first part of the rule, it's over. You cannot challenge now. But then John Gibbons comes out of the dugout, and I think Bob Davidson is the crew chief at third base. And again, this to me is an interpretation mm-hmm. of the rule. And as you said, later on down, ultimately the crew chief, it's at his discretion. Was he out in a timely manner? Well, he's overruling and saying he was.
And we should point out that the home plate umpire, you guys caught this, both you and Buck caught it. He was motioning to John, to Gibbons, that
you can't do
you
this.
Can't come out. You can't challenge. So he basically gave Gibbons the Heisman. You can't come out.
When he was coming out, John Tumpain knew that Burley was on the rubber, batter's in the box, and you see Gibbons come out. He just went right away. No, you can't. But that's where I think the issue is with the crew chief, Bob Davidson, by allowing it. And that really surprised me. Now, of course, Bob Davidson's comments, I believe, after the game, and you know better mm-hmm. than me, that he was basically saying that he felt that he was out in a timely manner. Well, to me, that's that bottom part of the rule you just talked about, that just little cover your tail as
exactly.
an umpire.
Exactly. We may have screwed up here, but we'll just say it's our judgment and leave it at that. So, I mean, that's our take on the Joe, I don't think the protest is upheld as a result of that.
I'll tell you what, whatever way it goes, somebody's going to have a beef. Yeah. If it goes against Joe Maddon, and I'm clearly behind Joe Maddon in this, that I think he's got a legitimate beef and he will file something with the league or let them know how he feels. Because your point has to be, why is this rule written like this if you're not going to enforce it?
Yeah, it's another layer of what was certainly a bizarre weekend for the Jays. A couple of positives, one positive, Drew Hutchison. I got to tell you, I keep waiting for the day, or I keep waiting for the outing, Joe, where I look at Drew Hutchison and I say, okay, great job, kid. You've done all you can this year. It's time to shut you down. He just keeps battling and keeps figuring things out. And, you know, we're not at the stage yet where you have to talk about moral victories with this team, but I just can't say how impressed I am with his growth as a starting pitcher. And you learn something about a guy when he's on fumes, and we're learning a lot about Drew Hutchison right now.
And I think throughout his struggles here in the latter part of the season, that's for me right away that the red flag went up, that here's a guy coming off surgery, only threw 35 innings combined last year at a couple different levels in the minor leagues. There's no way he can be built up enough, the stamina, the strength, the endurance to pitch late into the season like this. And he was having his struggles, so it made sense. Anytime I talk to Drew, absolutely not. I feel good. And you know what? That's what I want to hear from him mm-hmm. because he's such a gamer. He's such a competitor. And that's why you have to love the future in terms of this pitching rotation, because you've got a Marcus Stroman that has that same mentality. Aaron Sanchez. This is what you want in your pitchers. And this is the experiences that talk about growth, what Drew is going through right now and what he's gone through this last couple months. These experiences are helping him become what I think is going to be a very fine major league pitcher in the future.
As we take a look around Major League Baseball this weekend, a couple of interesting I guess you could call them player transactions. Yunel Escobar of the Rays was put on waivers. He was claimed by the Oakland Athletics, according to Ken Rosenthal and a variety of other sources. No indication yet that a deal will be able to be worked out between those teams. Bartolo Colon is also on trade waivers. And a lot of people thoroughly anticipating that the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim who are already going to be without Garrett Richards, will likely make a play for Bartolo Colon. I believe he's got to go through something like 28 other teams before he gets to the Angels. We're at that time of year, obviously, with we've got 5 days left until, or 6 days left in the month. And at that point, your roster, you have to have the players you want to be with you in the playoffs to be on your roster at that time. I expect we're going to see some moves in this week. And I would be stunned, Joe, if somebody doesn't go after Bartolo Colon.
I would think so. And I think it's going to be very difficult for the Angels. And you just said why. Because he's in the National League, it starts from worst to first in terms of placement in the standings in your own league. So he's got to go through the whole National League first and then come back to the American League and start worst to first. Well, the Angels are near the top, so they're going to have a pretty late pick. My gut tells me that Bartolo Colon would be taken before the Angels have a shot. But yeah, that's a perfect team. When they lose a Garrett Richards, that is a tough blow for a team that's right in that hunt and postseason bound.
And I'll tell you what, keep an eye on San Francisco. They're a team with pitching issues. They're a team that's never really out of it. And I wouldn't be surprised if you even see San Francisco try to make a move for Bartolo Colon. It's a big ticket for next year, but the Giants have been known to think in short term and then address the long term when it arrives.
Well, and I think when you're trying to win now, it's important to do that, and they're in a position where they've got to make their run. And Bartolo Colon's that veteran type, savvy guy. Is he a top rotation guy? Not necessarily, but he's a guy who can certainly help you in a pennant race.
We talked about the Yankees. They will, of course, be in town next weekend, or this coming weekend. Derek Jeter's last visit to Toronto. The Yankees are talking about going to a six-man rotation if Masahiro Tanaka comes back healthy and is able to contribute. And Joe, we talked a little bit about the Yankees earlier in the show. I don't know if I can ever remember the Yankees quietly doing anything, as you pointed out. But you look at the standings this morning. They're six out of the American League East. They're what? They're four and a half out of the wild card, and they're playing like a team that expects to be in the playoffs.
Well, he's not a real big name, but I think the biggest pickup for them is Brandon McCarthy, and he's been outstanding. And when you can kind of quietly do that and make that deal like they did, he's been a tremendous boost to a rotation that was just obliterated. You want to talk about starting pitching and injuries. The Yankees were ripped pretty hard, losing four-fifths of the rotation. Now, Pineda's back, but McCarthy, what a great pickup. And that's what helps. You need contributions everywhere, but I've always said it always starts on the mound, and that starter's going to give you a chance.
So again, just to review, the Jays and the Boston Red Sox start a three-game series tonight at the Rogers Center. Jay Happ against Clay Buchholz. Tuesday's probables, R.A. Dickey against Ruby De La Rosa. Wednesday, it'll be Marcus Stroman. He'll attempt to get back on track against Joe Kelly. Thursday's an off day, then the Yankees are in town for three games. Your last chance to see Derek Jeter. For Rob Bradford and Joe Siddle, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for spending time with us today on Baseball Central. We are, as always, brought to you by Home Hardware. I'll be doing primetime sports this afternoon, and Mr. Siddle will be working with Jerry Howarth and Mike Wilner. They'll have the call of the game for you tonight, 7 o'clock, from the Rogers Center and Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. Jays and Red Sox. Have a great day, everybody.